And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Hello and welcome to News from the Boo. This is your weekly update to know what is going on in and around KBOO. I'm your host, Delphine Crescenzo, and today I'm truly pleased to be joined by my co-host, Tom Lane, Development Director at KBOO. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Del. I'm excited to announce a very special KBOO fundraiser opportunity taking place. KBOO is taking a limited number of travelers to Cuba December 3rd through the 10th. Mm-hmm. Details can be found on our website at kboo.fm/Cuba. As you know, for many years, KBOO has reported on its complicated history, politics, and culture.
That is very true, and that is why we are delighted to welcome Charles Bittner, the trip organizer and guide, to talk more about the Cuba trip. Charles has taught sociology at St. John's University in New York City and at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, where his work focused on Cuban culture. But throughout the week of the trip, you will also be accompanied by a highly educated, bilingual, and experienced Cuban tour guide. But for now, let's welcome Charles. Hello, Charles from Boston.
Hello, Del. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Charles. Charles, let me kick off our conversation with a question. Can you tell listeners a little bit about how you became interested in Cuba?
I'm interested. My focus in sociology is mostly on culture and how it relates to crime within a particular country. And I've always wondered about why it is that Cuba, which is in a geographical area with such high violent crime rates, we could think about Jamaica, El Salvador, Haiti, Guatemala, and yet Cuba historically has had some of the lowest violent crime rates in the world. So I've always been interested in that. At the same time, I'm a guitar player. I've played guitar my whole life. And I've always loved Latin and specifically Cuban music. So I was working with The Nation magazine, I guess about 15 years ago. And they invited me to go down to Cuba representing the magazine to try to find out what in the world was going on in a country that so few Americans have ever visited. Mm. So that was my first trip down there, and I really fell in love with the country, the culture, the music, the dance, the art, and most of all, the people. Cuba is an extremely unique country based on its economic and political system, and also based on the fact that we've had so few relations with this country that's 90 miles away from Florida since 1961, despite having pretty much run the country for the 100 years before that. So that's where my interests lie. And since that first trip, I've been down to Cuba about, I think, 40-something times, both on my own and with all sorts of different groups of really wonderful people, authors and journalists and physicians that were interested in the medical programs. I've taken down musicians, drummers, guitarists, so very many, many groups. And it's just been wonderful experience traveling with people and showing them the Cuba that I've learned about, you know, over the course of the last decade.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Our listeners, I'm sure, are excited, you know, as they're hearing you about listening to you talking about all of the exciting things about Cuba. And so thank you for talking about the groups that you've taken there. You've talked about a variety of different groups. Can you talk a little bit more about groups maybe that you've taken with the places? Like, I believe you've taken a group with The Nation, just the same way that you will be taking KBOO folks. And then what kind of feedback you've received from folks?
Right, yeah, that's good. So I took about a dozen trips with the nation, both with staff, supporters, and many readers. The nation attracted a lot of academics, journalists, people like that. I've done trips with the Authors Guild, which is a large organization, sort of like a union for writers throughout the United States and the rest of the world. I've done, I'm on the West Coast, I've taken trips with Strings Magazine and Drum Magazine, based in San Francisco. I took a group of doctors, retired doctors, that volunteer their time in different clinics throughout the United States that mostly serves communities that don't have good access to medical care. And they were particularly interested in, as I said, the medical system, the healthcare system, especially public health in Cuba. There's a medical school in Cuba, which they opened, which only teaches potential doctors from outside of Cuba. And I was surprised to find in my research that there's usually about 20 or 25 students from the United States that are down there, and the Cuban government teaches them for free, and they leave there with a medical degree. And the only thing that the Cuban government asks in return is that they practice in an underserved community in the United States when they go home. There's no real deal, but it's sort of understood in the kind of people that go down there. The response from people is, it's really wonderful. I mean, I've probably taken well over 1,000 people from the U.S. to Cuba over the years, and I've seen people cry from the music. The people of Cuba just open their homes, their hearts, their lives, and everybody really has a terrific time. You know, the music, the dance, art, and everything else about the country, it's just unique. It's sort of magical to me, and I think people have been finding it that way, too. The letters that I recently just came back from Cuba 2 weeks ago with a trip I did for the New Republic magazine, and the letters that I got from the people following up the trip sometimes brought tears to my own eyes. I mean, they just describe, you know, and most of the people that go are not young people, and most of the people that travel with me have traveled to many, many, many countries. And when they write something like, this trip, we truly got an understanding of what Cuba is like with the people that you introduced us to and going into people's homes. You know, so I really appreciate that. Because to me, you know, it's really important to get as many people from the United States down to Cuba as possible to try to understand the reality that exists in Cuba, rather than, you know, most of the things that we've heard throughout our lives, you know, about Cuba. You know, to me, it's always important for people to open their eyes, see with their own eyes really what's going on in a country, as I said, that's just so close and yet so far away. So it's always wonderful for me, you know, to watch the people interact with the Cuban people I introduced them to. And you can just see just how much fun and how joyous it is. Mm. Personally, I love going down there myself because I get those same feelings every time I go. During the pandemic, I couldn't go for 2.5 years, and I never felt really right until I was able to get back. My first trip back was in December of 2021.
So can you talk, Charles, a little bit about how this trip is actually possible to go to Cuba? I think, it is really exciting to be able to have access to a culture that has been, as you say, so close to the U.S. and has been, you know, also present in the U.S. through immigrants or people in exile also. But now there's this this direct access where we don't have no longer to hear the hearsay, but we can go and get our own idea. Can you walk us a little bit through how that's possible now?
Yeah, well, it's the Cuba policy of the United States government towards Cuba has changed a lot, especially when it comes to travel. When I first started traveling to Cuba, George W. Bush was president, and it was very difficult to go. You needed a license from the Office of Foreign Assets Control, a branch of the U.S. Treasury Department. So I worked the nation, and we got that license. But once you had the license, and there were no commercial flights at all, so we had to charter a flight, which went out of Tampa and flew into Havana. But there weren't really that many restrictions other than you had to have a very organized program. You weren't allowed to go down as a tourist. You had to go to cultural activities. You had to meet, and really it was a real learning experience. So it was far different than the experience that others from the world go to Cuba, like Canadians go to Cuba all the time and go to the beautiful beaches and you know, mostly in Varadero and, you know, other just some of the most spectacular beaches in the world. We're not allowed to do that as Americans. We're not allowed to go down there as tourists. We're not allowed to go down there and sit on the beach. Mm. Not allowed to stay in hotels near the beach. But to me, that was probably a good thing, aside from the fact of not giving Americans freedom to travel. But it sort of forces people to really try to learn things about Cuba rather than just going to the beach. Now, Barack Obama was president towards the end of his second term. As I'm sure all your listeners know, he pretty much opened up Cuba. Cruise ships started to go down there. You know, cruise ships with like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people would pull in to several cities in Cuba. Commercial flights became available for the first time since, I think, 1960. So you had several U.S. airlines flying on a regular basis from all over the U.S. There were direct flights from Los Angeles, and there were direct flights from New York City and Dallas, and several from Florida, Atlanta, too. And Obama actually, as people probably know, went to Cuba, which was the first president to set foot in Cuba, I think, since 1933. I think Calvin Coolidge or something went on vacation to Cuba. But that was the first official visit of a president to Cuba in almost 100 years. And wow. Outpouring of love from the Cuban people for Obama was sort of overwhelming. I mean, Obama is just loved in Cuba. He changed all the restrictions and made it so that if you wanted to go to Cuba, yes, you probably shouldn't go sit on the beach. But if you wanted to go to Cuba, you could catch a flight and get to Cuba and have a nice time, and nobody really cared what you did. He allowed you to, new regulations allowed you to bring back rum and cigars and art and just about anything. Now, as people probably know, when Donald Trump became president, he went down to an organization. I'm not sure exactly what it's called, but they're like the Bay of Pigs veterans. Oh. Everybody knows that. Right. Bay of Pigs was the failed invasion of the CIA in 1962, I think. Went down and announced all these new travel restrictions, which made travel virtually impossible. You had to have a program. He stopped flights from going from most cities in the U.S. Only flights went out of Florida and only to Havana. He regulated the remittances, money that Cubans living in the U.S. can send to their families, limited that significantly. And these travel restrictions really hurt the Cuban people, despite the fact that, you know, he says that he's doing it for the Cuban people. But it wasn't really true. And that's why when you go to Cuba, they don't really care for Donald Trump that much, but they love Barack Obama. Now the restrictions are starting to change a little bit. And there are commercial flights. There will be commercial flights again. Starting in the next couple of weeks. For my last few trips, I had to take a charter flight, which I'm still going to offer because I feel like it's still the best way to go down as a group, leave from probably Miami, fly into Havana, fly in as a group so nobody has to negotiate the Jose Marti International Airport in Havana on their own. And now the regulations about what you have to do on the program are a lot more strict. I'm hoping that President Biden, now that he's starting to change Trump's regulations, I'm hoping that he'll open, travel sort of like under, as it was under Obama, which he promised to do when he was running for president. So now if the regulations don't change, we can still fly legally to Cuba. We have to have a very tight program. Everybody has to sign an affidavit saying that they understand they have to participate in the entire program. But the program is really wonderful. I mean, I've been developing, and this program has evolved over a decade. And there's really nothing on it that people wouldn't want to go to. But, still, it is, the restrictions make it more difficult to travel to Cuba. And the only way to travel now is in a group like, we're putting together at KBOO Community Radio.
Right. Charles, speaking of the trip that you've crafted, what specifically, for our listeners and supporters, why would they be interested in the specific trip that you have put together, that you've crafted? And can you tell us a little bit about where the tour will go and some of the things that people would experience with you on the tour?
Right, sure, Tom. So we fly into Havana to start the trip. And then a bus and a tour guide will take us to our accommodations in Havana. Over the course of all these trips down to Cuba, I've met and been in contact with some really wonderful, brilliant, talented people. Many of them, when travel was easier, they used to give five-year visas to Cubans to come visit the United States. I mean, the United States would give five-year visas. And a lot of Cubans came up to my apartment in Brooklyn. In fact, they started calling it the Solar, which is a Cuban word for the way they broke up the large mansions and put families living in it, because my little apartment got so crowded with Cuban people. So I've established a lot of relationships with artists. So we'll go to their private studios, art professors in the top art schools in the country, and they'll talk about art education and talk about, their own life history. And then we'll go into a venue that people that I know have a small restaurant, and bring in a group of singers and percussionists, so musical concerts. I have friends that teach at the University of Havana and in other colleges that'll come in and talk about race and gender in Cuba. Economists that talk about the impact of the travel restrictions or problems with the currency that they're having right now, inflation, why people are leaving Cuba in such significant numbers now. Then there's so many really wonderful private restaurants. So we have breakfast, lunch, and dinner at different private restaurants every day that we're there. We'll leave Havana after doing these kind of things. We'll also go see a famous ballet school and get a performance by some of the top ballet dancers in the country, and talk to the dancers and find out, just talk to them about their own history, their dreams, what they love about dancing. So everything is an interaction and a performance, and then an interaction with the people. Then we leave Havana, take a ride to Cienfuegos, a beautiful city on the south part of Cuba, where we'll meet this group of just incredible, it's a chorus of about 20 men and women, extremely talented, beautiful singers, and, then talk to them for a while, visit some of the galleries around Cienfuegos. I drive a short ride to Trinidad. UNESCO, the entire city is a UNESCO site. Most of the city was built in the 17th century. We'll stay in people's homes and go out to some, again, beautiful restaurants there. meet with the city's historian, and she will tell us about the history of Trinidad. We have a little bit of free time to walk around. There's a lot of artists that have shops there. Mm-hmm. And then back to Havana for another couple of days of eating, dancing, music, art, and a little bit of education, too.
That's great. And for our architecture buffs out there, I'm sure, as you mentioned, the UNESCO identity of some of the cities and sites that you'll be seeing, is there specific architecture tours as well of the city of Havana?
We'll take walking tours of old Havana, the oldest part of the city. And then we'll take walking tours of some of the old forts that they built. I mean, Cuba was the center of access to the Caribbean, and there's a lot of battles to try to control Cuba. Spain obviously ruled over Cuba for centuries, and then the French came for a while, and the British came for a short time, obviously the United States after that. So Havana was extremely well fortified. You know, no matter what they did, other countries seemed to be able to come in and sneak in some way. So they built another fort and another fort. And there are some of the oldest and largest forts. So we'll visit those. I have a friend that's an urban planner and an architect. Mm. And talk about the history of architecture. And then we'll take a tour through Old Havana and Central Havana, and point out some of the things that he was talking about. So, yes, I mean, the architecture is phenomenal. I mean, there are some problems with buildings, especially those that are right on the water. Obviously, Cuba sits right in the center of hurricanes.
Right.
There's been a lot of damage to buildings on the water, and the government is trying hard to restore all those old buildings. But, you know, the architecture is really, really beautiful and interesting and unique. So,
right. As I'm sure the natural landscape is as well from the pictures that you've been sharing.
Sorry?
As is the natural landscape from the pictures you have shared, the flora and fauna look amazing as well.
Yeah, and Cuba, you know, has... there's a lot of work going on, environmental work, work to try to control as best they can, you know, from one small country, climate change. So they're extremely interested in the environment. And for a long time, you know, no cruise ships were coming, which there's no cruise ships anymore because Trump decided that cruise ships should never dock in Cuba again. So the natural environment in Cuba is extremely unspoiled. There's not that many cars. There's not that many planes. So there's very low levels of pollution. And they really are interested in keeping the beauty of the island. There are animals and plants that are unique to Cuba that are found nowhere else in the world. Yes, and there's a beautiful mountain range right outside of Trinidad that we ride through. So, yeah, we see a lot of natural beauty, you know, as well as beautiful people and buildings and things like that. So, yes.
Fantastic. And so you talked a little bit, Charles, about the restrictions, right, that the American government has imposed on Cuba and on the folks who will travel with you, which are very interesting. But can you talk also about COVID specific protections? What kind of things are in place, either imposed by the American government or by the Cuban government or by you through the tour?
It'll be by you, but I think we've already agreed that everybody okay. that comes on the trip has to be vaccinated, fully vaccinated. Right now, and things change, right now Cuba has amongst the lowest rate of COVID in the world. I think as of this morning, it was like a third of a person has COVID per 100,000 people. The entire population of Cuba is vaccinated. When the vaccines were developed, the Cubans lined up and took them, and I think the entire country was vaccinated in just under 2 months. So the rates are extremely low. The healthcare system is very good. You know, obviously, we don't know exactly where we're going to be in December when we're taking the trip. But, you know, if there's any danger, problems, rates are very high, then we'll postpone, you know, we'll postpone the trip. But, I don't anticipate it. I was glad to get out of the United States four times in the last 4 months to go to Cuba. They all wear masks all the time indoors, and they wear it covering their nose and their mouth. Nobody argues about wearing masks. Nobody argues about getting vaccinated. People trust the healthcare system because they're connected to the healthcare system. In each neighborhood, by law, there has to be a family doctor within a neighborhood. For very few people, Cuba has the highest per capita number of doctors of any country in the world. So they've dealt extremely successfully with COVID, far more successfully than the United States.
Well, thanks, Charles, for that. And just a few common questions that I'm getting. You know, KBOO has announced this Cuba trip through a variety of channels. We've just started announcing it over the last few months. And a few of the questions I'm getting, Charles, if you would kindly enlighten our listeners. I know that it is a limited number of folks that can join the trip, and just the number of people. And then the second question would be, I'm getting calls and emails from all over the U.S. and you know, some from other parts of the world, and people are interested in joining this trip. Can you tell me where you'll all gather in the U.S.? You talked about the charter flight. So the capacity and the place where you would all meet for a charter flight together to Cuba.
Sure. So I'm going to have a charter flight. I'm not including flights because, you know, everybody flies on their own. Right now, there are commercial flights out of Tampa, Miami, and Fort Lauderdale, but that's it. President Biden has just announced new routes to Cuba and is getting rid of Trump's restriction that flights can only go to Havana. So by the time December rolls around, I'm not really sure what's going to be happening, but I think the best thing to do is for everybody from wherever they're coming from find their way. I'm pretty sure it's going to be out of Miami. I'm going to have a charter flight. They give us incredible service on the flight. We board first as our group. We're traveling mostly with Cuban Americans are going home, bringing stuff to their families or just going on visits. And then when we land, we all leave the airport together and travel together. But if people find that they'd prefer to just take a commercial flight, they can do that too. But I think in the past, most people have joined the charter flight. So we all meet, probably coming from Portland, you'd want to fly into Miami the night before. We usually have dinner, people that have done that, and meet at the ticket counter for the charter company where we get our visas, our boarding passes, our return tickets. We file the affidavits that have to go to the government. So they take care of everything on the charter flight. We're the first people to board the flight and the first people off the flight to get into Havana. So probably the way it'll work is the vast majority of the people on the trip, which my feeling is we're going to take no more than 22 people. So it's very, very limited space. A lot of the restaurants aren't gigantic as they are here, so 22 I found is the perfect number. So I think my feeling is most of those 22 people will purchase the charter flight and all travel together as a group. It's certainly easier, it's nicer, and it just seems better. But if anybody works for Delta Airlines or United and can get a free trip from Miami or Tampa or Fort Lauderdale to Havana, well, then certainly welcome to do that. In that case, we meet at the accommodations. I give them very, very specific instructions of how to get from the airport to exactly where they're staying. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Well, 22 is my lucky number, so maybe it will be for the trip too.
Right. So the idea is that, you know, we get, you know, I imagine that we will get that 22 and then, you know, plan another if people still want to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a usual, you program usually if place, if organizations go and, you know, I won't take anybody. I mean, I'll only take, you know, organizations that I feel, you know, are right to have people go to Cuba. I mean,
right, with the right attitude.
And I don't, yeah, with the right attitude of going and, you know, people that don't necessarily believe the propaganda, which is most of what we get in the United States. And I just want to say this while I'm here. I mean, Cuba has changed dramatically since 1961. The U.S. policy hasn't changed at all. Today, as I said, we're going to go to private businesses. We're going to go to art studios that are owned by the artists in apartments that they own themselves. We're going to go to restaurants that people own. We're going to meet with entrepreneurs and business people, clothing manufacturers, and others that own their own business. Today, a third of all Cubans work in private industry. That figure was zero in the 1960s. So Cuba has changed dramatically. They have internet service across the island. People blog and write pretty much anything they want. Yes, you cannot stage a protest without a permit in Cuba. You cannot publish a magazine that actually gets printed and goes out, but you can write stuff online. There's all sorts of bloggers. So the changes that Cuba has undergone are dramatic since the 1960s. Sadly, the United States policy has not changed. They make believe nothing has changed in Cuba, and that's just wrong. And that's why when people come to Cuba with me, they see the reality, and that's really important to understand a country that's so close to us.
Well, thank you so much, Charles. I want to, again, give the details of the website, kboo.fm/Cuba. And Charles' information is also on there if you have questions directly for Charles. Thanks again, Charles, for joining us on News from the Boo today.
You're welcome. And you can see I love to talk about Cuba, so please, feel free to call any time. I'm not teaching in the summer, so I have plenty of time to talk. Feel free to call or email me if you need any additional information at all. Okay, I hope you guys will come.
Well, thank you all for listening to News from the Boo. Thank you, Tom, for co-hosting with me. And News from the Boo is your weekly chance to find out what's going on in and around KBOO. So thank you all for being a part of KBOO. All right, Charles, thanks so much for...
Thank you, Charles. For